Well, hello out there in podcast land, and welcome back to Guilty Pleasures, the show where we celebrate the movies we love, despite what critics, public opinion, or even our own God-given sense might tell us. I'm your host, Lou Hare, for the Front Row Network. Welcome to a special episode of Guilty Pleasures, because it's very rare we actually get to talk about a new movie. And so we're going to be doing that today. This is kind of a little bit of a mixture of our Full Disclosure podcast and our Guilty Pleasures. But I'm telling you, this is mostly Guilty Pleasure. Just we're going to get that off the bat. But we are going to be talking about the new straight to video on demand release of Capone, the Tom Hardy drama, I guess, whatever you want to call it. Sure. But we are going to be doing a deep dive, and I'm very excited for my guest, because the last time I think the three of us did a podcast together was the other Tom Hardy classic, Venom. And since Venom 2 has been pushed back to next year, this will be our Tom Hardy fix for the year. So I'm very excited to get into it. First and foremost, please welcome back Sam Davina. How's it going, Sam?
Hi, you guys. It's going great. Just living the dream. Not showering, not brushing my teeth. Just, I mean, this is all I've ever wanted, really.
So is this inspired by Capone? Were you just, you know, you're just walking around in a bathrobe all the time?
I've actually started wearing diapers, which has been a really newfound freedom that I'm really, really excited about.
Excellent. And rounding out the panel, another Guilty Pleasures regular. Please welcome back Christian Crosby. How's it going, Christian?
It's going good. Buongiorno, bella. I'm good. Thank you so much for asking. I am puzzled at like, or I thought that like the quarantine would help me explore my own inner demons, and I'm relieved to know that they're nowhere near as complicated as Al Capone's and or Tom Hardy's or the people that were making this film.
Fantastic. Well, because this is both Full Disclosure and Guilty Pleasure, I should let you know, we're going to do a deep dive into this film. So there are going to be spoilers. If you have not seen the movie, maybe we'll talk for a couple of minutes without massive spoilers and just give a couple of first impressions. And then we'll go full into the spoiler alert. And then, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. But so let's get into it. Capone, starring Tom Hardy, written and directed by Josh Trank, he of the Fantastic Four film. This was poised to be his comeback film after that was not so well received. This is one of like many films that was scheduled to be released in theaters, but due to everything that's going on in the world, it decided to go straight to video on demand. We are all the better for it. A quick plot synopsis is that the 47-year-old Al Capone, after 10 years in prison, starts suffering from dementia and comes to be haunted by his violent past. That's from IMDb, and I needed that because I struggled for like a solid 15 on how to sum this movie up in a sentence. So thank you, IMDb. The IMDb score, by the way, which is why we're talking about it on Guilty Pleasures, sits at a robust 5.0. And its Rotten Tomatoes score is 40%. So what would on paper sound like kind of an Oscar baity movie has not gotten the reception of your typical Oscar fare. So let's just dive right into it. Without too many spoilers, maybe a 30-second take here on Capone. Christian, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I had heard about this some time ago when it was still called Fonzo, was I think like the first title for it. And I thought it sounded like awesome. And I'm a huge Chronicle fan, Josh Trank's first feature film, which I think is really good. And then I'm probably one of the few people that, like, I don't think that Fantastic Four was very good. I think that it's the really good first act to about a 12-hour long movie. And I think that he has, like, Patton Oswalt said really good things about him, accused his editor on the movie Big Fan that he did. And I know that he is talented, and I kind of try to push all those things aside of him going crazy altogether. And then, like, Tom Hardy, who's just, like, always crazy and, like, entertainingly so, I thought would... And then there was, like, that publicity still of, like, the grainy black and white with him with the cigar in his mouth and full makeup. And I'm like, oh, this looks like it's going to be great. Tom Hardy... you know, as Al Capone going insane over the course of a year. But yeah, I was safe to say, and we'll go into it obviously, a little let down to you know, put it lightly.
Okay, Sam, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. I was not familiar with this director / writer, but I am... huge Tom Hardy fan. So when this got first announced as well, I was super excited. You know, nobody can do crazy characters going insane like Tom Hardy. So I was like, yes, great, Tom, we're getting the Oscar this year. Here we go. And I waited a couple days to watch it after the reviews were coming out just because I wanted to see. And I was like, oh my gosh, 5.0, these people don't know what they're talking about. And, you know, 40%, oh no. And, I scored it lower than a 5.0, unfortunately on IMDb. We'll get into it. I feel personally attacked by Tom Hardy because he just let me down so much, is he going to win an Oscar for this or is he going to win a Razzie for this? You know, like I'm still undecided.
Yeah.
A lot of questions.
Good. I'm excited because I have a lot of questions too. I knew nothing about this movie until the trailer came out, and right off the bat, I was like, oh, Tom Hardy's got a very interesting choice of an accent. I'm like, okay, like this is going to be him kind of chewing some scenery, but in the service, like it's a gangster movie. Sure. And it's the later years of Capone's life. So I'm sure they're going to like wrench that out for some drama. It really did feel to me like kind of an Oscar Beatty type movie. If it wins anything, I would be stunned. Except for, yeah, we can get into Tom Hardy's performance or maybe makeup. I don't know. But yeah, this is a perfect selection for Guilty Pleasures because I think calling it a good movie is an overreach, but it's certainly an interesting movie. And there are things about this movie that blew my hair back. I'm not gonna lie. So I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about that. But yeah, Tom Hardy is... he's an interesting guy, and I got a theory on him that we'll dive into. But so if you're here just for the full disclosure part, there you go. The movie's not great, but man, there's a lot of stuff to get into it. And I think there's some stuff about it that if you hear us describe it, sounds like, no, that can't be real. That didn't happen. It 100% did. There is some wild stuff in this movie too. So I want to get that out there too. We'll get into that as we go. But so there you go. If you want to pause the podcast now, watch the movie, come back, because we're now in the spoiler zone. So full spoilers in 3, 2, 1. Al Capone dies.
Ugh. I mean, I die. You know, just... I mean, it had... You have Tom Hardy, you've got crazy makeup, you've got apparently he's speaking English, but you can't understand him, which again is classic Tom Hardy. So I'm all about all these things, and I don't know. I wanna talk to him. I wanna be like, what do you think? How do you think that movie went? Like, are you okay with all of that? I don't know. I'm just so confused. My first question would be, why the need to change the title from, was it Fonzo or Fonz or whatever, to Capone, like, a month ago. It's...
Well, I think because they felt it, Fonzo seems weird to me. Like, it's real close to Fonzie. And I'm like, is this a dark take on Happy Days? Which I kind of...
Which would have been better.
I'd kind of be here for it. If right, somebody's going to give me a gritty reboot of Happy Days, I'll take it. but that seems weird because, yeah, the hook of this movie just seems to be, yeah, it's another movie about Al Capone. And so I guess it seems weird that they'd name it anything other than that in the first place, because it's about Capone. But what's weird about it is the choice to make it about the last year of his life and literally nothing else. That was the thing that took me off guard. Like, I thought that this was going to be some kind of like bookend stuff where we were going to see him in the beginning and he was going to be old. And then we were going to get flashbacks and we were going to get young Capone, rise to power, fall from grace, yada, yada, yada. No, the only time we ever see Capone's backstory is through like his dementia fever dreams. And so I thought like, oh no, we're just literally just going to, we're now, I got halfway through the movie. I was like, oh, we're never getting there now. We're just sitting the whole movie watching him like deteriorate.
Now, were those the dreams, were those things that really happened, or was it like part of the dementia? I'm still really confused as to what was real or what was him going through an episode or something. I don't know. No, it was not clear.
Christian, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think there's, that the flashbacks or the scenes where he's going through his syphilis hallucinations were not, I didn't take them as things that we were replaying. I took them as things that were kind of a hodgepodge of things that had really happened. Where he's watching the guy be tortured and then eventually murdered. I didn't take that as he's reliving that memory that had taken place, but he's seen lots of guys tortured and murdered. And so this is just one of those that he has created in his mind. I feel like there was a pretty big missed opportunity of the guessing game of, is he really this sick or isn't he this sick? Is he playing this long con to escape with this money that he has had buried somewhere where it's wet and on his property around his mansion? Because that's like a really interesting thing that happens. And then they kind of, it very clearly go, they pull the rug out from you very early on and be like, no, he's just a crazy person. Mm-hmm. And he literally can't figure it out. The is he still dangerous seems to be like a really important question that is never asked throughout the movie
Yeah, well, it doesn't get, yeah, it, you're right, because it gets asked, but it gets asked at like an hour 10 into the movie.
Yeah.
By like the FBI agents, the FBI agent who's like, no, he knows where this money is. And everyone around him is like, no, he's out of it. He's done. He's lost his faculties. There's no reason to, and he's like pressing the matter. And it's like, I think you're right. Like that's an interesting concept to like start the movie with. So we can be like, oh, maybe we do want to think. But the best part about that then is if that's the case, the climactic moment of the movie then would be the interrogation scene where they finally get to talk to Capone and they're pressing him and him shitting himself.
Yeah.
Which time?
The second time. Yeah, people. Tom Hardy poops his pants twice in this movie. Twice. And in one time, it's used as a climactic moment. Because that's the moment that they realize, oh, no, he really is. Like, what? He is gone. He is, you know, he is incontinent. He's got nothing left to offer. And so, yeah, like, I love a world in where I didn't even think about it till you mentioned it, Christian, but I, like, that's like the moment where we realize, where everyone realizes, oh, this is done. That is in a very long sound effect too.
Yeah, I mean, so unnecessary. I mean, we knew what was happening, you know, everyone made the faces, and then it just kept happening. And
yeah, God, and he has the look on his face as if he's like struggling to keep it going almost.
Right.
Where he's like, he's growling. Tom Hardy trying to squeeze the poop out of his butt. I, you know, and they, another interesting thing too is just like, what a, and they, where they look to subvert your expectations, but completely at the wrong time, or we find out that Matt Dillon is a figment of his imagination. His character is someone that doesn't exist, which is interesting because our introduction to him is the camera slightly off him on, like, I don't know, a mirror or something, a countertop, and then he's having sex in the background, and the phone's ringing, and then he picks it up, and he hears presumably that Al Capone is sick, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm on my way," or whatever. Then they go out, and so, like, was that there if he wasn't a real person? Who was he? Was he also having sex with an imaginary? Did Al Capone think up the scenario in which he's notified in the midst of sex to come help him by somebody else? Mm-hmm. And then where he shoots the alligator in the head on the boat, he and Matt Dillon go fishing, and Capone gets his fish taken away from him by an alligator. He rushes to rushes into the ship, emerges with a rifle, and then shoots the alligator a couple times with the rifle, and then starts screaming/growling, "Was it worth it?" over and over. Then that asks the question that brings up: was he by himself on a boat? If Matt Dillon wasn't there.
Right.
I
thought the entire time, and I still kind of think they just screwed it up because Linda Cardellini called him. Right. Am I right? Didn't Capone's?
Yeah. I'm assuming Matt Capone Dillon didn't call. Yeah.
To come see Al. So how is it that he's not real? Is Linda Cardellini also suffering from dementia? Like, I think the final table read, nobody picked up on a little bit of continuity.
No, the continuity in this movie is all over the place. There's none. The whole idea, like this is Tom Hardy and Josh Trank just getting stoned somewhere and being like, we're going to do all these things. The audience isn't going to know what's real. It's going to make them question the reality of stuff. And like, it's like, that's the whole idea, is that, like, I think it's trying to elicit like what a fever dream or like a descent into madness would be like. But it also does never, because it never pulls you out. It only pulls you out every once in a while. And when it does pull you out, it's like, it makes the movie make no sense. Like, because you mentioned Matt Dillon. Did Matt Dillon ever interact? Was Matt Dillon ever real in this film? Because there's the scene where they're sitting talking together, and then Linda Cardellini comes in and he's gone. And like, oh, you were talking to nobody. And then there's the scene where they're watching The Wizard of Oz together.
Oh, yes, yes.
Which highlights.
Oh my God, I completely forgot. I completely forgot about that.
That's a great scene, right now. Actually.
It is a great, it's one of those, that's the thing about this movie, is we're going to hit on all, there's lots of moments where this movie really pops and it like comes alive and like, oh, I'm 100% down in this movie, but it's like sprinkled in between like long slow passages of time that are just so like poorly paced. But yeah, there's a scene where in Capone's theater, they're watching Wizard of Oz, and Capone just starts singing along, "If I Were the King of the Forest."
Yeah. And then he rolls his at one point. He rolls his R's. Yeah. Yeah. Sounds terrifying.
But was that real? I don't know. Not, like, you don't know any. There's only very few moments where you know what's actually real in the movie.
Which is fine and a great script device. And, you know, plenty of films work fantastically that way. But you can't not stick to it. And you can't not... I mean, unless it's a very specific choice, don't let the audience leave still wondering, like, was any of that real? I mean, it was like...
Yeah, there was no starting point of normalcy. The opening scene is where it's Thanksgiving and he's playing with kids and he is falling and sliding around in the mud like a crazy person, which he is. And then he sees a young kind of chubby kid who I believe to be him and his younger self. And then I immediately go, oh, okay, so he's already kind of nuts at this point. We're going to go back and see kind of his rise to power, maybe like a little bit, you know, is that device that is used where the main character sees their younger self and then we flash back. But he's lost it from immediate. We don't see him. A movie that I kept thinking about that kind of handles this mental deterioration is The Madness of King George, where he's normal and then like he tends to repeat himself and he slowly starts to slip and he does defecate himself as well, but it's actually pretty powerful and sad when it happens and not unintentionally hilarious. But you start to see him slowly, his actual descent. He starts as a crazy person. Mm-hmm. And just goes through like other things of being crazy. This is what I think that they would probably call in screenwriting class as an and then screenplay, in the sense that like nothing is really interconnected. It's just this happens and then this happens and then this happens and then this happens. It's not a chain of events that is linked because one thing happens causing another thing to happen. It's just scenes that take place over this life that aren't very interesting, frankly, to watch.
Right. I mean, I feel like before I started, I needed to like do a like Capone recap of my own just to remember, you know, I mean, being from Chicago, I know most of it, but I wish, excuse me, that they would have, I don't know, maybe started at the release when he got released from prison, about why and or something. That, I mean, we just dive right into the crazy. And I guess I don't understand why the feds are still after him and why they're still, you know, planting people and, you know, recording him if he's out of jail. I mean, I know they released him because of the dementia. Is it because they're looking for this money that might or might not exist?
Maybe
I don't know why they were there. Like he spent 10 years in jail.
I mean, I guess you would assume that if he's released, there'd be somebody, some of his old like contacts might reach out to him, whether he's in his faculties or not. So I could kind of buy, I would buy why you'd monitor. I mean, especially because I'm sure, you know, when you release him from prison, I mean, the you know, obviously the media isn't, you know, in 2020 isn't what it was in the 40s, but there'd probably be this outcry of why are you releasing this guy, this notorious guy? And they're like, well, he's not dangerous, but the people in his orbit might be, and maybe they gravitate towards him. So I could get that, but like this movie does not do anything to like posit that theory. No. It's just like, hey, this is what you need to know. He's and all it cares about is all this movie really cares about is his like dementia and his physical deterioration. It, in the weirdest way, it reminded me of The Passion of the Christ.
Okay.
Because all you see in The Passion of the Christ is Jesus like being tortured and beaten and crucified. You never get moments of why should I care? And like the answer is, well, because it's Jesus, you probably have heard of him. And you probably have a formed opinion about Jesus before you go to see The Passion of the Christ, I would assume. Nobody's going to that movie thinking, I want to know what this Jesus guy is all about.
What makes him tick?
Yeah, look inside that mind. And I think the filmmakers, I think that they felt the same way about Capone. They're like, oh, everybody knows Capone. Everybody's seen a movie about him. They've heard about him. We don't want to retread all the stuff other people have done. And in like glossing that over, I think they like took the context of the movie away.
Yeah.
Because that's my other question. Are we supposed to feel bad for him?
I don't think so. Maybe. I don't know.
But maybe it was just me as a person feeling bad for Tom Hardy, the actor. There's a little bit of, you know, black, just gray area.
I don't feel bad for Tom Hardy at all. I think that he was on board immediately, and they were like, so we're going to put you in a diaper. And he goes, where do I sign?
right.
I honest to God, I think like if I were Josh Trank, I would have like cut from Final Draft the last 10 pages where there's the thing with the Tommy gun, and pasted that in the first 10 pages and be like, this is all he's going to read when I send them the script. So it might as well be the craziest 10 pages of the thing. And he goes, all right, I'm in. I'm going to do it completely. Mm-hmm. I don't, do you guys know, or did you notice there's at one point, Gino, one of his bodyguards says, I just wanted to check on you and Al. And Linda Cardellin, I can't pronounce her last name. Linda Pizza Sauce says, that's a terrible thing to say. She says, we don't use that name when he calls him.
Right.
Al. Did they ever go into like why that was?
Not that I remember, which is why I was confused when they changed the name to Capone. Like, if we never use, quote, the name, why did we change it from Fonzo to Capone? It's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to say it, what we're all thinking. Where was Marty Scorsese when we needed him?
Yeah.
Because it would have been game changer.
That would have been a pretty interesting 5-hour long movie.
Yeah, sign me up. Sign me up.
Yeah, no, and there are so many parallels to The Irishman in this, in that this is like the third act of The Irishman, but only grosser. Yeah. Like this is the gross version.
Right, more poop.
Way more poop. Like no pathos, no nuance, no like self-reflection, just like the nitty-gritty of what an elderly person with dementia would go through. And I think that's where the sympathy comes from. Like what you were saying, Sam, is yeah, obviously you'd be sympathetic to anybody who has to like, you know, who struggles with that. And I don't want to make light of that, but in the context of this movie, that's like all this movie has to it is watching him. And so in that regard, it doesn't even matter that it's Capone. Like the fact that it is kind of complicates it because you're like, well, this guy was an awful human being. And we're just watching an awful human being like go through something that is awful, and it's not causing him to reflect or regret. It's not causing anybody to think about anything other than like hallucinations and like diapers and all that kind of like weird stuff.
Right. I can't decide. And then, excuse me, I'm sorry. They introduced his, from early on, his long lost son, or whatever Linda Cardellini doesn't know about, or nobody knows about. So I was like, oh, okay, so this is going to be the plot. So, you know, it's going to be reunion of father and son, and then, I don't know, happily ever after as Tom Hardy, as Capone ages and eventually dies. But even that story ends up being nothing. I mean, the son shows up, we all find out, oh, he's got another son, and then they hold hands, and then I think Tom Hardy dies. I don't I don't understand the ending. I don't know if did he just die or
okay. That's it. His illegitimate son has an arc. But he doesn't at all. Right. The way that the when I watched like the trailer, the how it was like I think kind of marketed, it was like, oh, this is kind of going to be a horror movie. This is going to be like him going insane, and there's going to be like we're going to follow like cops probably as like the main characters who are trying to like get information or whatever MacGuffin that they come up with. And then like Tom Hardy's going to be like kind of potentially very dangerous still. And we're going to figure out, you know, where this money is and blah, 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 blah. At the same time, you see him at one point in the movie, in the trailer, him crawling over a pile of dead bodies.
Yes.
It looks pretty harrowing. And there is a scene in which a character cuts out their own eyes, but it's all... it's all clearly, we know at that point, is all clearly a hallucination. So, like, there's no threat or real danger that exists.
You're right.
It's really boring. It's really, really, really
it's very boring. And you're totally right. The trailer made it look super rad. I thought this was, like, Capone's The Last Dance. You know, like, we're... here we've got the, you know, we're gonna get the flu game and then Pippin's gonna throw his back out and I just still a pop culture reference for you guys for the week. But it was marketed completely wrong. Like, this is a movie about an elderly man going through dementia and how his family is dealing with it, and that's fine. But it's
why is she? Why is Linda? Why is Linda Cardellini? Why is she so surprised that he has an illegitimate kid? Like, he has syphilis. I don't have syphilis. I wonder where else he got it from. Like, I don't know, like, why she's surprised or threatened by this. I mean, obviously she's Italian, so that means she's Catholic, but. She has been living in this world of organized crime for a long time. I would assume that this should not come as a surprise to her whatsoever.
Right, because it's not like this is some moral upstanding human being. This is Al Capone. I mean, he's capable of quite a bit, but cheating on you is a bridge too far. Like that, and again. Maybe, I don't know the character of Al Capone because this movie has no interest in that. The movie is zero, like, it's a movie about Capone that has zero interest about Capone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's
very much so.
It's fascinating in that regard that they would choose to do that and be like, they certainly could have gotten this movie made if this was about, like, if they really wanted to do some sort of, like, thing about, you know, the deterioration of a body, like Tom Hardy could do that, and that probably would get him an Oscar because
right.
It could be some harrowing. But then, like, but to marry it with a gangster movie and then a horror movie is just such an odd stew. And yeah, and as you pointed out, I think we cannot. I don't stress that it's so boring for so. This movie's way less interesting than I think we're making it sound.
Yeah, I would watch Tom Hardy read the phone book. I mean, Tom is you know in my top three, but oh my gosh, I had to start and stop this for days, and I knew we were doing this podcast. I was like, oh god, yeah. I have to watch the ending. Like, that's not a good reaction to a movie. I just want to, breaking news, I had to look something up on IMDb for the movie. We dropped to a 4.9.
Oh, okay. So we're live stats. I appreciate that. So,
no, problem.
I did actually put in my IMDb score while we were talking about this. I might have been the one that dropped it.
Yeah. It was you.
Okay, well, I'm going to go in. I'm going to give this sucker a 10. We're going to get that back up to a 5.
Let's all right, go. Listeners, it's up to you. Can we get it up to a 5? Can I ask a question? What? I could not. I watched it three times. Where the little girl asks him why we say what we're thankful for on Thanksgiving, and he tells this long inane story about growing up in New York, and then something about it's us against, or it's Brooklyn against the world. I could not connect the dots of to like make that story make sense in my mind at all. I have no idea what he was talking about. And then it ended, yeah, and then it's us against the world. That's why we have Thanksgiving. It was like, have you ever watched an interview with Lovie Smith, the old Bears player, where you'd be like, hey, so the Dolphins had a really big, really tough defense that year. And then he'll end the story 15 minutes later with something like, and that's why I like Granny Smith apples. Not connected to anything. That's exactly what it was like to hear, you know, those. And it's not like tied into the thing, but like nobody else in the room is confused. They all go, oh, okay. That's our Fonz. Like he, you know, he's the one who can explain it as this, like as the patriarch of the Capone family. It was really, really weird. Also, Al Capone was not born in Italy. He was born in the United States. I assume that he knew how to speak Italian through his parents, but something that, like, you know, people that are as you or I would revert to their native tongue in moments of anger or passion or whatever. He did not speak Italian natively at all. The fact that he reverts to Italian, you know, when he's angry or upset is something that, like, I don't think that Al Capone would have done. It's possible that he could have. I don't doubt that he knew how to speak Italian, but like he you know, he has about as much Italian in him as Tony Danza has. And like, I don't think that that's something that, I bet you that was, I'm willing to bet that would be Tom Hardy being like, I want to speak Italian in the movie when he gets upset.
Oh, sure. Cause yeah, well, and that's the thing with Tom Hardy. I want to talk just a little, let's talk a little bit more about Tom Hardy, is that I think he is such a fascinating actor. In every facet, like, he's incredibly talented, he commits to everything, but I'm gonna say this, this was my takeaway. I believe Tom Hardy to be his generation's Nick Cage, because like Nicolas Cage, he's incredibly talented, and in the right, like, he's in like a good movie, he is outstanding, but in trash, he's even better, because he goes so far off the deep end in his performances that he gets so wild. And I'm like, oh, like I, like you said earlier, Sam, I don't know if he's great in this movie or awful. It's kind of both.
Right. And that's what I always love about him. I mean, thank you, Christian. Before I watched it, you said, make sure you watch it with subtitles, even though it's all in English, obviously, but you can't understand a damn thing he says, which is part and parcel for Tom Hardy. I mean, that's his thing. I mean, he got an Oscar nom for The Revenant, and I don't believe he spoke English, even though he was definitely American. So thank you we should have said that before, for the listeners who haven't watched yet, watch with subtitles.
Right.
Does not take a cigar out of his mouth. Any scene. For something.
Until it's replaced with a carrot.
Yes, thank you, doctor. So when Tom has the stroke, or when Capone has the stroke, the doctor decides that cigars are bad for him, so let's give him carrots.
For how long? And the doctor goes, forever. And like the look on his family member's face, like, what? He's not going to be able to have it. Like, they would know that he's not supposed to have cigars.
Right. Even before the stroke, like, he wasn't doing well. Like, if we're letting him shit his pants, like, let him have a cigar. I don't understand.
That is where I would side with Capone on that 100%. Because if I'm in that phase of my, just let me have the cigar.
Right.
Like the lung cancer is like the least of his worries at this point in his career. Because now,
you know, I'm glad that you brought up Nicolas Cage, because I was thinking about it as well, of who, and I fell down this rabbit hole one day of watching old like Letterman interviews with like Richard Harris and Peter O'Toole, and then like that led me to like interviews with like Keith Moon and then Oliver Reed. And Oliver Reed played Bill Sykes and Oliver Twist famously, and has just kind of played all these really crazy intense people. I like, it dawned on me, and I'm like, that's who Tom Hardy wants to be. He wants to be Oliver Reed. If you don't know, Oliver Reed was the guy that trained Maximus in Gladiator, and was like a famous, like, kind of just crazy person. Tom Hardy is sober, but he was not at one point, and definitely neither was Oliver Reed. They were just kind of crazy people, and like playing all these dark, kind of just psychotic people. And that's what Tom Hardy, I feel, is like really drawn to. And particularly his character in Taboo is just a copy of Bill Sykes from Oliver Twist. And it hit me that, oh, that's who he's trying to be very much.
Thank you for bringing up Taboo, because one, excellent show, I think, and Tom and his father write it. Two, I'm mad that Tom chose to do this movie instead of just doing Taboo season 2. You know, it's been 2 years maybe. So I would have preferred that over this, because that's side note, if people haven't watched it yet. You know,
we had talked, I'm sorry, we were talked about Taboo written by, we were talking before this started about Peaky Blinders, written by Stephen Knight, who wrote Taboo with Tom Hardy. I would very much like him to write a second season of Taboo as well, but, and maybe this is for a future episode, I do not know if you've done it, Stephen Knight also wrote the movie with Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey, Serenity.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
I would like to speak about that film at a future date. Sorry, yes. That's my two cents. I'd just like to interject there.
Penciled in. No, I love Serenity.
Never seen it.
Oh,
whew. You're going to love it.
You
can now, Sam. you can now.
You're in for a ride. Yeah. Yeah. That's just what I think. And I honestly love that. I love that about him. I love that he's going to do, like, he's going to try and push and do all this weird stuff and commit to it 100%, you know, and just that's the thing. When you take big swings, sometimes it's going to be amazing and sometimes it's going to be just a giant whiff, and that's fine. You know, in this case, you know, he sounded like if Jabba the Hutt was a Dick Tracy villain. Like, that's because he, like, it's unintelligible, but like also like stereotypically offensive. It's weird. It's such a I wouldn't have it any other way for him. It's, and he's clearly, it's clearly a vehicle for him, and he's the most interesting thing about the movie.
Yeah, I felt that he was, and you guys have heard me do it before, but he sounds like if Howard Dean's scream that got him not elected president in the 2004 presidential race, where he, that thing, where he did that, if that once, like, yell was a character, that's who his Al Capone would be.
Just a sidebar, Christian, you always bring up the Howard Dean scream.
Like, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire
over
life.
Over a decade, and... I compare, and again, I'm very biased, but I feel like Tom can be in the ranks of this generation's Marlon Brando, almost, courage that he, and just the crazy choices that he makes that almost always land. I mean, in all his movies, he, the craziness he does and the choices he makes are usually great. And I feel like they were great in this, but he had no backup whatsoever. The script was terrible. The direction was terrible. Linda Cardellini, I love. She's a great actress. She had no backup either.
No, she's wasted in this movie.
Wasted in this movie because she's excellent. And they tried to give her an arc, you know, where she's like, you know, screw it. I'm taking over. I got this. Don't worry about it, Tom. We're wearing diapers. It's fine. And she had a little bit going for her, but I just think it was such a waste. So, especially for Tom, when you know we need him in legit things.
He's got the talent and appeal of a young Brando with the agent of an old Brando.
I just hope, like, what's going to keep him out of, like, Nicolas Cage territory, as long as he pays all of his taxes and he doesn't have to do, like, movies that are only available at, like, gas stations, then I think that he will be okay. I do think that if you do swing as big as he does, he's acting's Jose Canseco, I think that, you know, he will probably be rewarded and ridiculed.
Yes,
equally.
Oh yeah.
I don't think I've scrolled up and down IMDb a little bit, and nearly every review says this movie is garbage, but Tom Hardy makes it worth it.
I've never seen the word feral used more times in a review and then I did in the reviewing the reviews of this movie, and they're not wrong.
Yes.
I forgot what I was going to say. I can't remember what I was going to say. Sorry about that.
Do you think this will hurt his career in any way?
No.
Oh, I don't think so. And I think it being on video on demand just makes it a blessing, because it's not going to be like this high profile bomb. In fact, if anything, it's going to exceed expectations, because nobody expects anything of this and there's nothing else to watch right now. I'd actually heard like its first week of VOD was actually pretty solid. And this was one of the
sequel.
First. Yeah. So I don't think so. And I think you both are right. I think he could earn an Oscar any single year he probably wants to.
Yeah.
Like, he's talented enough. If the script and the material is right, he'll have that trajectory where he can do that. But then he could also decide he's going to do some just bonkers action movie at some point and just be all over the place and not necessarily need to, just because like he feels like it. Like, he's very excited to do the sequel to Venom. He's getting more creative control over the Venom character.
Great. More. Again,
100% on board for it. Yeah. So it's like, to watch like a guy, I'm always like, I love to see a guy who honestly, he could slum it in like as just be generic handsome dude for like the next 10 years, make a ton of money and be fine. So I love the fact that, yeah, he's going to be, no, I'm going to be Al Capone and I'm going to poop myself. A couple, yeah. You know, I'm going to roll around in my own feces for the hell of it, instead of, you know, being in some like Netflix rom-com.
Oh, I was going to say, I remembered what I was going to say. Kyle MacLachlan, I've never not seen him play a complete creep. So to see him, like, largely be the voice of reason in this movie was very strange for me. My introduction to Kyle MacLachlan, I'm sure it was a lot of people, was Twin Peaks. Mine was the guy that bangs Elizabeth Berkley in Showgirls. That's how I know him, is just having sex with Jesse Spano in a pool. But yeah, to see him be not a crazy, or not to be like a weird guy, it was an odd thing for me quite a bit.
I felt the same way about Matt Dillon, because I saw those three names. I saw Tom Hardy, Kyle MacLachlan, and Matt Dillon, and I'm like, oh, we're in for a ride. Because those are three eccentric actors. Like, Matt Dillon can choose scenery like none other. And he's muted too in it. Like they're both, like they both give kind of more muted performances. I mean, I don't know if this movie could take any more like insanity in its performances, but like, yeah, you're right. I think he does a really good job in the limited time that he's given. I also thought Matt Dillon's, for a character that doesn't really exist, does as good as he can do to make something out of it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I think that we should nickname ourselves for any Tom Hardy movie that we do, THC, the Tom Hardy Club.
Oh, so
in. Done.
T-shirts. Yeah.
Put the T-shirt THC. Right there. Yeah, I'm high on THC. go to our website, people. You'll find that.
Working on it.
On nprillinois.org. There's so much. Yeah, there's so much here. There's a couple of scenes I want to hit. So we talked about Matt Dillon. So we talked about, you mentioned that scene where he goes and he shoots the alligator in the head. The scene that precludes that is Matt basically, okay, and again, keep in mind, none of this is real. This is all hallucinations. But there's a scene where Matt Dillon's character has to sneak Al Capone off of the compound.
Right.
And to do so, he dresses in drag.
Oh my God, you're right.
He has like the old lady cap and glasses, and I'm like, what am I watching?
Oh, see, it was so boring. I just forgot all the stupid shit that happened. Like, I guess that's
so great.
Yeah. So if Matt Dillon is not real, did Capone just dress up as a lady and drive the boat? Like. And then if he's suffering from dementia, how is he driving the boat by himself and then gets home?
Right. Or did none of that happen?
Yeah.
And in his dementia-addled brain, he has to dress and drag to get off his own compound? Which raises a whole other question. If all of these are fever dreams and hallucinations, why does he look like present day Capone, right? Because if you're in dementia, you don't necessarily realize that you have dementia, right? I mean, from what I understand of the disease, is that you don't, you know, you don't know what's going on. So why does he, in his, you know, why wouldn't he look like young Capone or the Capone he thinks that he is?
That's like, a really good point.
Like, and it's highlighted most that it's the most egregious moment is the finale, which I think we can get into now. So Al Capone, there's this through line. There's this gardener who keeps popping up that Al Capone's suspicious of the whole time. And the gardener shows up and Capone turns around with a golden Tommy gun and shoots him. And then goes on like a Scarface-esque shootout of his whole compound where he just like mows down people left and right. He's doing so while as present day Capone. So he's doing so in a robe, a diaper, and a carrot dangling out of his mouth.
Yeah. And which even like, is it more humiliating the fact that it's a cloth diaper? Like it just looks so much more cartoony than.
Yeah, because it's all saggy.
Yeah.
So it's so weird that it's like in his mind he's being Capone like he used to be, but he's really not, but it's not real anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Right. He ends up just shooting the gardener in the knee, and then the gardener is just like mildly annoyed about it. Everyone's like, oh, haha, silly Capone, put your Tommy gun away. And
I think this is what happens if you spend too much time in Florida, either way.
I'm so glad you mentioned it, because that's the one line I wrote down, because it's probably my favorite line of the movie, is you spend too much time in Florida, you become a hillbilly.
this movie was, I'm just really disappointed by it. Just like how boring it was. I would love to, and again, I will not like condemn Josh Trank based on this, just because I really do enjoy Chronicle and I thought that Fantastic Four was given an unfair shake. This is not great. I would love to read an original version of the script. before those butchers at Redbox, who apparently produced this. I didn't know that Redbox was still around, but apparently they are, and they wanted to make this movie. I would like to see what those butchers did to the script.
Oh, I didn't know this was Redboxed. I had to pay like $10 Amazon. Well,
yeah. Well, they were just the ones that produced it. Oh, okay. Produced it. Produced I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is fascinating of the script and the storyline. And again, as I keep reiterating, the casting of Tom Hardy is all great. You know, the idea is there. Like, what an interesting, I would love to see his final years, but I don't, like we've been talking about, there needed to be more lead up to his deterioration. I mean, if you come in blind, not knowing Capone at all, you're just like, why is everybody so obsessed with this guy? Like, why is he so legendary? He just sits on his back porch eating carrots and pooping himself. Like, why is this even a movie? But it was so promising, and I've been so excited for 2 years. And I feel like our podcast, this one's a little more of a bummer one. The three of us, I think, are just so distraught over the fact that it was so boring, that there's just not a lot of good stuff to talk about. And, well, and talk about the bad stuff, because you're like, I don't want to relive it. It's just...
Well, the crazy, and that's the thing, is like, if you like list all the crazy things that happen in this movie, this sounds like the most insane movie you've ever seen.
Yes.
You know, you've got like two scenes where Tom Hardy poops himself. You've got this final shootout of he's in a diaper with a carrot. You've got him in drag. You've got him singing Wizard of Oz. You got Matt Dillon gouging his eyes out, like going full Oedipus. And it's like, there's all sorts of these little crazy moments that happen, but it's stretched out over like an hour 40, and in between are like, it's just these long, slow, like panning shots and slow pace, because there's no plot. If you haven't picked up on that, there's really no conflict to the movie, because it's not like he's fighting dementia. He's already has dementia. He's already kind of succumbed to it by this point anyway. There's no any plot, any character that exists is our existence. So there's like, that's the thing, is like if you're hearing all this and like, oh, this sounds insane, I kind of need to see it, I don't blame you if you do, but just like, get up and go. You can get up and go to the back a lot. Don't poop yourself while watching this movie. Get up and be like, okay, something crazy just happened. I probably got a good 10 minutes before something else like worthwhile happens.
That's why it took me a couple days to watch, because I just couldn't go on. And it is only an hour 40. It's not The Irishman, you know, and I couldn't go on at certain points.
It's half as long as The Irishman, but feels twice as long.
Yes. And
it's insane to me.
I was really bothered by his makeup. I think he looks 97, only 47. And sure, he's had a tough life, got out of prison, you know, health obviously not stable, smoking cigars, you know, is probably not great for your skin, but he looked like he had just come out of a 7-hour bath. Just like, his face was pruny, and he lives in Florida, and all he does is sit outside, and he's the palest person you've ever seen. I thought the makeup was bad. Like, I do not foresee an Oscar. Well, I don't foresee any Oscars.
No, I don't foresee anything for this movie, other than ridicule.
No, this will get forgotten. This will be forgotten about before, whenever Oscar season happens, this movie will be long forgotten. But that was the weird thing too, as I sat and watched this movie, it was like, how old is he supposed to be right now? Because they never make that a point. And then I'm like, because the like, him standing, like when Linda Cardellini enters the movie, they look like, she looks like his granddaughter. And that's like, oh, that's his wife? Like, wait a minute, why don't they age her? And then they reveal, well, Capone's only 47. And like, Linda Cardellini probably looks early 40s, like late 30s, early 40s. So like that like tracks, but it's like, it's, yeah, he looks like baby Marvin from like Roger Rabbit. it's a crazy choice. Yeah, and so it's all over the place. But again, like everything else in this movie, there's no basis for reality of any of this stuff. Okay, so before we wrap up, are there any scenes or moments or things that we haven't talked about yet that we haven't covered yet, Christian?
No, the only thing that we hadn't touched on that I was thinking about, we talked about Matt Dillon cutting out his own eyes, and then the torture and like neck stab murder that he hallucinates, where he's at like this weird Shining type party and then watches some torture. Tom Hardy seems to be pretty disturbed by the violence he is is happening while he's watching what's going on. And I want to be like, it's your hallucination, dude. Like, you can kind of control this. You've probably done and seen a lot worse in your life. I was curious as to why he was shying away from it. And yes, you did mention the fact that he came off like he was like 97 or 87 as opposed to 47 years old. He plays it like a doddering old man. And I guess that's what dementia does to you. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's the whole, like, there should be like this element of, does he feel guilty? Is that what we're meant to think about this movie, that he's reflecting or he's being tormented? Like if he's being tormented by his past deeds, like he's in prison of his mind and he's being tortured by, like, he, you know, that's the only thing he can think about is just the awful things he was around. But it just never lands. Like it never doesn't happen enough for it to feel like that's the, you know, the thread of the movie.
Why, and there's something else I couldn't figure out too, why does the FBI agent, the blonde kid from the Rock movie with Paige, where he plays her older brother, do you know what I'm talking about,
Lou? Fighting with my
family? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why does he has this line like, you know the difference between Al Capone and Hitler? Hitler's dead. And I'm like, well, there's several large differences between Hitler and Al Capone. But like, I didn't understand like why he had this personal interest in like getting Capone again. This agent, or he's blackmailing, or not blackmailing, but he's using leverage over Kyle MacLachlan to get information about where this money is hidden. And he's like, if you don't play ball, you know, you're going back, or we're gonna let some there's some consequence involved for Kyle MacLachlan, which we don't visit again or is ever addressed for whatever dumb reason.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just like there was just no explanation as to why this guy wanted to see Capone, I guess, behind bars again.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was confused about. Again, like they let him out of prison. Okay, so the FBI should be done with him. Lou, I understand your point where, you know, they just want to keep an eye on him in case he turns into Capone again. But if they're looking for this missing $10 million, why is he still living in this huge mansion? Why does he still have all of this stuff? But then at the end, it all gets taken away after he shoots his landscaper. But then they go back and it's all the furniture is back again right after that. So I'm just not sure what the plot is. I'm not sure. There's no beginning. There's no middle. I think there's an end. I think he died, but I don't know because it's Tom Hardy and that's just sometimes his face. There was no explanation for anything. It was just pointless. I mean, I excuse me, I'm sorry. like I said, I would watch Tom Hardy read the phone book. And this, I think, gave me a good idea of what that would be like. And it's not as interesting as I had originally imagined. Maybe it was the carrots.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, that brings up the last scene that I'll bring up and we'll wrap is that there's a moment where they get a close up of him on the carrot and he's drooling through and it like the drool drips off the carrot. And it's like, again, that's one of those things where I just imagine that like Hardy and Trank were sitting there like, yeah, we're going to make this so real and in your face. You're going to see the drool coming up. And I'm like, to what end though? Like, again, it would mean something to me if I cared about this character at all. But all I know about him is that he was an awful human being in real life. So right. I'm not sympathetic to him as a character or as a person. Like, it makes me feel kind of bad that I'm, like, enjoying watching a man in the throes of dementia. Like, it's weird. It's there's a disconnect that happens there that I can't wrap my brain around. And I don't think the filmmakers can wrap their brain around. So they're just like, well, we'll just throw a bunch of crazy shit at the wall every, like, 5-10 minutes, goose the audience, and then we're going to go back to our, like, super serious. That's where it really feels like an Oscar bait film, because you know a movie's trying to win an Oscar when it goes so slow to establish a scene, because they want you to feel like you're just living in that moment, but the moment's filled with nothing. There's not, like, anybody who tells me The Irishman is long and boring, sit through Capone.
The Irishman's fun. There was no fun to be had in this movie whatsoever.
Yeah. even the jokes, like, you know, the Florida hillbilly thing, like, I didn't laugh at anything. I was just so befuddled the entire time. I think probably 20 minutes in or so is when I realized, oh, okay, well, this is crap. So I'm just going to see what Tom Hardy does and see what crazy choices he makes. Mm-hmm. He's pulling all over himself. Yeah, that's Tom Hardy. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I should never, like, struggle to stay awake in a movie that involves this much pants shitting.
Solid gold Tommy guns usually
keep
my interest.
Yeah.
You would think
that
would
have been awesome. But...
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Well,
we tried, you guys.
we're not even amused with ourselves.
No.
Bummer.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take this to the guilt meter. On a scale of 1 to 5 shame spirals, 1, you love this movie, you think everyone needs to see it. 5 being you hated this movie, no one should see it. If you ever watched it again, you'd watch it by yourself and not tell anybody you'd watch it. Where does Capone rank on the guilt meter? Sam, let's start with you.
I mean, I have to say 5. And Tom, if you're listening, I mean 1. I'm not sure if he's a subscriber. If he is, I love you.
Yeah, he is.
Sweetheart, this was just, I don't think you knew what you got yourself into. Or maybe there were other promises or so many changes. Or maybe you loved the hell out of it. I don't know. Maybe Tom is super happy with it. I have no idea. And I'm very curious to know. But it's so boring, you guys. It's just so boring. And like we've been saying, alligators, diapers, carrot cigars, Tommy guns. Like, this sounds great. I promise it's not. It's just not. And I'm disheartened by it and... a little depressed, to be honest with you.
All right, Christian, how about you?
Let's say a 4. I don't think that, like, there's not an ire in me to dislike this movie. There's no, like, wrath involved. I just didn't like it and pretty strongly didn't like it. I would not recommend it to anyone to watch unless they were just like wanting to see it for the gag, but it's not, we haven't, it's not bad enough to be like ironically enjoyable, and it's not good enough to be enjoyable either way. It's just this weird, it's just, it's bad, and it's not like super, it doesn't take itself super seriously, but at the same time, like, it doesn't, I don't know. It's a mediocre failure. I'll put it that way.
It's not a guilty pleasure. I got no pleasure from it.
I would say it's probably, it's going to be a 4 for me too. And I'm stunned by that, because there were moments of this, of like kind of giddiness that I had during some of the crazy stuff. And that's the, if you could give me a leaner cut of this movie, like an 88 minute cut where it's all the craziness and like most of like the like pseudo dramatic bull crap out of it, it's probably a guilty pleasure like staple, I would think. But there's just, it's a 90 minute movie that goes on for an hour 40, and it feels in like way longer like than it should be. And the only thing that keeps it from being a 5 to me is, I'll say, if you watch nothing of this movie, you could watch the last half hour of this movie and get your fill of the crazy. Because a lot of the crazy stuff that we talk about does happen in that last half hour. And then you'd be like, okay, I got it. I got a taste of it. So like, I don't rent this for $10 and watch like the last half hour of it. Wait till this is, you know, at Redbox for 99 cents or whatever. But yeah, I wouldn't. So while you mentioned it, Sam, I do think that Tom Hardy feels at least a little bit high on this project. He at least feels high enough with Josh Trank, because recently they were talking about their next project that they would like to do together. And here's what Josh Trank had to say. This is from Up Rocks. I'm working on this limited series that Tom Hardy is producing. He's involved in. He's very excited about. I'm very excited about. It's a story that spans decades, right from the start of World War II and concerning the formation of the CIA, but from a point of view that really hasn't been seen in movie or television before and is just mentioned in books. It deals a lot with Castro in Cuba and capitalism versus communism. It's really big. Sort of the, you know, capitalism versus communism. It's really big.
If he plays Fidel Castro, I will love this. I was just thinking, when you compared him to Brando, I'm like, well, Brando played non-Caucasian people. He played Zapata. So, like, this could be his shot to do it.
Tom Hardy
back everything I've said.
Tom Hardy as Fidel Castro, lock it down. Done.
Oh, God.
All right, well, that's going to do it for Guilty Pleasures. I want to thank you both for coming on. I want to thank you for enduring this film. This is what happens when we go into something sight unseen. Sometimes it's Venom and sometimes it's Capone. I almost said Castro because that was wishful thinking. I'm glad to always have you back on to talk about whatever. We'll do a little bit more due diligence on our next topic. But anyway, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I know you're both holed up like the rest of us, but either one of you got anything going on, any projects or social media that you want to plug?
I have a podcast that you can check out. It's called First Tragedy, Then Farce, available on Apple Podcasts. It's where we take a current event, a character, a theme going on right now, and try to find some historical precedence for it. So we had done a mob. We did the Colombo War in exploring some of the things that were going on during the Mueller report. There was a lot of talk about organized crime there, so we try to find some historical precedence for that in the first Colombo War, just as an example of things that we talk about on that podcast.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I've heard it. It's great. Y'all ought to check it out if you haven't yet. And then where do you get any social media that people can find you on?
Yeah, at TragedyFarce 51 on Twitter, or that I think too on Instagram. TragedyFarce 51 is our handle. So check those things out.
All right. Sam, you still on your social media hiatus?
Oh yes. I gave up social media about 2 years ago.
You're better than
actually, me? Yeah. Well, actually during quarantine, it's been great because there's no type of FOMO because nothing's happening. So I've been checking up on friends. People have had babies that I didn't know about. People have gotten married. So, I'm sort of reassessing my social media usage because I've missed some important things in my friends' lives. I guess they didn't feel like calling me. I'm a school teacher, so I've got one more week left of school, and then just gonna quarantine it until I can't anymore, I guess.
Awesome. Well, as always, you can find me on Twitter at the fake Lou Hare. You can find me on Instagram at Lou Hare. And you can find the Front Row Network on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z. We got a lot of fun stuff going on for the rest of the month of May. I know we're going to be, we've got one more live Facebook event going on, or at least one more. We know. Who knows how long we'll all be sheltering at home. It may be an ongoing series, but yes, we're doing another bracket. This one for the month of May, we're doing the greatest 90s song of all time. Voting is going on right now on our Facebook page. But next Friday, May 29th at 8 p.m., you can tune into our Facebook page and watch the podcast live as we and the rest of the panel argue and fight and determine the greatest song of the 90s. So that's always a lot of fun. If you've missed it, you can catch our April podcast of the greatest TV theme song of all time, which was a very fun and yet cathartic. We got deep for a while. We were definitely in the throes of quarantine when we recorded that, but it was a lot of fun. And then also our March bracket, which was the greatest movie star of all time. I know that classics and flashbacks are back up and running. So is Beyond the Mouse. Guilty Pleasures, we're going to be doing something, who knows what we've got coming up. But if you have a movie you want to see us do, hit me up on social media at the fake Lou Hare. Hit us up on our Facebook page. Let us know. We'll do anything. We just sat through Capone. Come on. what else can you do to us? I want to thank you for tuning in. You can follow us anywhere you get your social or you get your podcasts. Please make sure if you're following us on iTunes to rate and review us. Give us a 5-star rating if you would. If you mention a movie in your review, we'll do it. So please help us out. Help us grow the podcast and let other people know about stuff like this that, hey, there were people actually willing to watch Tom Hardy poop himself for 2 hours. So
I will always be willing to watch that.
So thank you for coming on, and I can't wait as when Venom 2 comes out, we're definitely bringing you all back. But I'm
DHC
will be in the house. We'll bring back for that, but hopefully we'll see you sooner than later. But until the next time, for the Front Row Network, I'm Lou Hare.
I'm Sam Dubina.
I'm Christian Krausby.
And as always, we'll see you in the front row.